Willkommen zur 20. Folge des Berlin Thunder Podcast. Zum ersten Mal haben wir einen englischsprachigen Gast, unseren Running Back Jack Crawford. Wenn euch diese Folge gefällt, hinterlasst ein geschriebenes Kommentar und eine 5-Sterne-Review bei Apple Podcast und Spotify. Feel the Thunder.
Playmaker Alert.
Yeah.
Jack Crawford in the Berlin Thunder Podcast. Our first podcast episode in English.
Hey, I'm excited because I actually get to listen to it.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, man. I'm blessed. I can't complain.
What happened to your voice?
This past weekend, we did me and Alpha Jallo did a Ballers Retreat camp in Alicante and Murcia, Spain. And we dealt with over 400 plus kids and some other like high school football players and yelling and screaming and lost my voice.
That's amazing. Is this something that you enjoy giving back to kids?
I love it. Absolutely love it. From my standpoint, being an athlete, I feel like it's very important to do that because especially in Europe, you get to spark so many kids' interest at a young age. Interacting with kids who've never held a football before is crazy to me. So I love it.
Are you surprised about how much people love American football over here in Europe, especially in Germany?
Man, to my understanding, like how football grew here, it's been shocking, but how many people actually love it in Germany. Like Germany was one of the first countries that I heard like football was big in when I was in the USA. So it was a goal for me to come play in Germany.
What were your first thought? Like, what? The Germans? They love football?
Yeah, I mean, coming from America, if you're not into history, the only thing you know about Germany is the Holocaust. So football, American football in Europe, let alone like around the world, is like not common for most Americans to know it exists. And I think my first time ever knowing about football in Europe was watching the NFL Europe.
You watched the NFL Europe over there, over in the States?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing. I grew up with the NFL Europe too. Nice. So when I started playing, it was a big thing over here and they were our heroes. Like the few, we call them nationals, the German players that played here, they were like our heroes. Like we went to games. I even worked there as a ball boy and cable kid. Yeah. And you know, actually my first job ever was with the Berlin Thunder franchise.
Oh man.
This is crazy. It was $20 for the whole day of working our asses off.
Yeah.
You know, we got a little like sandwich snack pack and we were setting up like the commercial stands and like little flag football tournaments. Yeah. And then during the game, I was, you know, carrying I was a water boy, cable, you know, and was us like 50 kids and all playing youth football in Berlin that worked for them. That was my first paying job in my life.
Wow.
Yeah, I was 14 years old.
Look at you.
And now, you know, I'm here with, you know, arguably the best running back in the European League of Football playing for the Berlin Thunder, talking to him.
Oh man, I'm humbled to hear that. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, so you watched the NFL Europe. Were you surprised at all, or was it just football to you at this point? I mean, you were young.
I was young, but my goal and dream was always to play in the NFL. So I went to a couple of NFL games when I was a kid when they were the Houston Oilers. They moved to Memphis first before they went to Nashville and became the Tennessee Titans. So that was my first football game. But I never was one to watch sports because it's hard for me to watch sports sometimes. Like, people find that interesting. Like, you don't watch sports? Like,
I do sports.
Like, but watching the game makes me so anxious to play and wish I could be in that position to be like, man, this guy made this move. I would have did this different or something like that. But watching the NFL Europe was like, I probably watched the NFL Europe more than I watched NFL games because it came on like in the summer or something.
Yeah.
And, like, it would be randomly on TV. I'm like, there's football in Europe. Like, I found that to be more interesting than watching the NFL. Like,
and there were some success stories out of the NFL. Kurt Warner, arguably the biggest, but James Harrison played in the NFL Europe. So there were some big names that played over here. You know, just a few. At the end of the day, I think commercially, it wasn't the biggest success for them because, you know, they had to get used it had to get people used to American football. So I remember that they gave a lot of free tickets.
Oh, wow.
I don't know anyone that bought a ticket. it was all free tickets. But what I heard at the time was that it was like a developmental league, like the NBA D League.
Exactly. That's exactly how I saw it. It was like the guys who, you know, needed that extra shot to go to the NFL, this is where they went to, you know, keep playing.
Which is actually a cool idea.
Oh, I think it's awesome. And it's actually how I ended up coming to Europe to play. It was like I needed film based on things that I went through and didn't get drafted, but I needed film to give to NFL scouts, and that's how I started playing in Europe.
So for the people that don't know you, where did you grow up? Where were you born? A little bit of background.
I'm from Memphis, Tennessee. I grew up in a very small, rough neighborhood, and my mom pushed me into football to keep me off the streets because I was just one of those kids that'll do at least something, everything once. I would try. I was peer pressured to do something. I'd do it because my friends thought it was cool. So I was like heading towards down the wrong track, and my mom was like, "No, I got to keep this kid, you know, off the streets," and put me in football, and I was naturally good at it. My father, I wasn't raised by my father, but he is probably the biggest football legend, so to speak. Everyone refers to him as a legend from my city, but unfortunately for me, he wasn't in my life. So I didn't know much about his career, only what I heard about him. And, you know, once I started playing little league football at five, coaches start fighting for me to come play for their team. So, like, I actually been a professional all my life. I would get paid to score touchdowns and things like that. So
in elementary school?
Yeah.
That's, you know, now we got a subject to talk about, you know, like all this political correct, you know, like, yeah, football players shouldn't get paid until the NFL. I mean, things changed now with, you know, NCAA rules, yeah, regulation in regards to image and name, image and likeness. But before that, for all the people that listen out there, before you entered, you know, the NFL draft, or you were draft eligible, you can't make a penny officially.
Right, exactly.
Like all of us, maybe you heard the stories of Johnny Manziel and, you know, those big names, yeah. Reggie Bush.
Get paid by boosters.
Yeah, by boosters. When I was at North Dakota State University, I was really surprised how many guys were driving such nice cars.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was like, I was taking the bus, you know, like school bus and, you know, walking everywhere. And all the guys had like an Escalade. And, right. And they were also from poor neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. So I suppose, I mean, they weren't, you know, like loaded from family. Yeah. So I was always like, and then I heard like, yeah, there's more than just the rent checks they're getting, you know, like when they live off campus. So
yeah. I mean, I'm not a snitch per se.
No, we don't take
it.
It
exists. No
names.
I'm out of college football. It don't matter to me no more. Yeah. But I'm happy that the NCAA changed the rule and allowed these guys to actually get, you know, paid for their likeness. I think they deserve it. I don't know how many people know the effort that goes along with playing college football.
Most people don't know that, haven't experiences.
Man, I used to have debates with my classmates in university where they'd be like, oh, football players are so lucky. You know, you guys get to go to school free and this and that. But I was like, you know,
it's not free.
It's not. If you know the schedule that we're on day to day, waking up, I had, you know, we had strength and conditioning, 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, class all day.
5:15.
Man, see?
Wake up 4:30. you're a tough guy. You grew up in elementary football, you know this thing. But me, as a spoiled little German player, realizing that I have to wake up at, you know, 4:30 every morning to get, you know, and I used to put all the athletics clothes on me and went to sleep. So I could, you know, wake up.
Yeah,
be ready when I wake up.
Nice.
So you started at 5:30 in the morning with athletics.
Yeah.
Like sprint and stuff like that.
And in my case, playing a running back, they had an ideal weight for me. I was around 220s. I played 230, but they wanted me around 225. So I would have to come do cardio club before my actual session with the group. So I would have to do like 45 minutes on the assault bike or Stairmaster.
It was called cardio club?
Yeah.
So the guys that had to lose weight were on the cardio club?
Mm-hmm. And that's before the actual strength and conditioning.
And what was the club called for guys that had to put on weight?
I don't think they had a class, but they made them drink extra protein shakes, and you know they forced meals on us. Like you gotta eat.
Hilarious because in North Dakota, we had in the strength conditioning room we had like a chalkboard, and it says where's the beef and where's the six pack.
Okay,
so if you were on the where's the six pack board. You had to stay after practice and do cardio.
Oh, man.
And when you were on the where's the beef board, they checked your lock-ins in the dining hall.
Okay, yeah.
And I was on the beef board. So yeah. I randomly, during the day, went to the dining hall and just checked.
Just checked in
because I couldn't take any more food in.
Yeah, I understand it. And that, for me, was one of the biggest reality checks. I was like, what? I got to wake up at 5 o'clock now just to be there and then got to work out after. So when I get into class, I'm dead. Like, I'm not paying attention in class. I'm automatic sleep. Teacher asks a question. I'm sorry, I'm out. But I commend the university because they gave us tutors. So that helped a long way.
The first time I ever touched caffeine was exactly in that situation.
Man.
Because that 9 o'clock econ class,
yeah.
Econ 101.
Oh, yeah.
I went into class because I had to wake up at 4:30. I had 5:15 team sprint,
mm-hmm.
then team breakfast, and then I was in the 7:45 weightlifting class.
A long morning.
And then I had to be at 9 at my first class,
yeah.
You know? And I was like, exactly like you, like...
Yeah. Yeah, they understand. It was so crazy. I could not stay awake. It wasn't until my afternoon classes that I was like, okay, now I'm up because I know after my last afternoon class, you got lunch really fast, and then you got to head to, if you needed physical therapy or get ready for team meetings and stuff like that, or get dressed before, like everything, you had to be on time for everything.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to ever get in trouble for being late because they threaten your scholarships like that. So I was like, no, I got to, wake up now. But those morning classes, I probably never stayed awake in any of them. And I know my teammates didn't either.
Yeah. Sure. It's always important for me to touch on that subject when we have a guest on that played college football. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Bjorn tells the stories on TV and such. But people really don't realize the grind that it is.
Yeah.
And also the pressure, not just football-wise, but class-wise.
Yeah.
You have to have a certain grade point average in order to stay NCAA eligible, mm-hmm. or team eligible. Exactly. So even if you have, you can't practice if you have certain grades, and they don't give them to you.
No, not at all. Not at all. Not at all. I mean, you may have a couple of professors that like sports so much that they don't want to see an athlete fail, but in most cases, that's why a lot of us get tutors. So, we won't fail, but they stress the fact that if you're ineligible, like, it's done. It's done. So, and this is one thing that I'm playing the devil's advocate with it. Like, I don't agree that most academic advisors push athletes in certain subjects to graduate with. Like, for myself, they kind of forced me to study African-American studies. I had no interest in that. I had interest in music or business or communications, and it was like, no, it might be too hard. It might be too much of a workload. I'm like, no, but this is what I'm interested in.
I didn't agree
with it.
I'm shaking my head because that's why you see a lot of, physical education majors and you have to take bullshit classes.
Exactly.
Not that racial history is a bullshit class. It's super important. Yeah. But if I look at my first semester, the classes that the advisor gave me, it was nothing that would further me in life,
exactly.
Career-wise.
Exactly. Exactly. And I argued with my academic advisor, and it became depressing to me at one point in time, because I was like, I'm not studying something that I'm really interested in. This is why I'm sleeping in class. If I got classes that I was really interested in, maybe I'll, you know, take it a little more serious. But going to learn about slave history and things that I already learned in high school over and over again just so I'm eligible to play, like, it was BS. It was bull.
So let's go a little bit back in time. You started football at what age?
Five.
Ooh.
Five turning into six.
And there was a school or kindergarten organized or club organized?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think, like, Little League football in America is pretty much, like, community-based, right? So you may have teams in different communities, and then they form a league in which we all play in. And so my first team I played in, I started as a wide receiver. Never could catch a ball. And this is how I converted to a running back. They started giving me reverses, and then I would go score. And so, like, the coaches separated, and the one coach that made the new team instantly called my mother, was like, I want him to come play here. And my mom was like, what do you want to do? I was like, I don't really know this coach that well, because he coached older guys, but he would always watch our games, and he was like, he's going to play running back. And I was like, I wanted to play running back anyways, because that first year, one of the coach's sons was the starting running back. So it was like he was given that position. I was faster than him. And so I was like, that's the perfect opportunity. And then he was like, yeah, I'll pay you money for every touchdown you score, too.
How much I paid you for touchdowns?
$7 a touchdown.
Dude, that's a lot of money for a six-year-old.
Oh, yeah, I was getting 5 and 7 touchdowns. I was going home with $50 almost.
Did you have to give it straight to your mom?
No, that was my allowance. That was my allowance. So my mom.
We're a rich kid. You were a rich kid.
I was able to go to the corner store and give me a couple of bags of chips, and, you know, I was cool. But, you know, my I don't come from a family that was financially, you know, stable. My mom worked a couple of jobs. Grandmother worked a couple of jobs until she was 60, and so football was my family, like my true family. I would always have to stay over my teammates' houses before the games because my mom had to work on Saturdays. Grandmother, you know, doing what she had to do. And that's how I kind of grew up in football. And so, like I said, I started playing for different teams. And, you know, my mom was like, it's your opportunity. You can do whatever you want to do. Like, okay, coach is paying me to play. I'm going to this team or this team. So it was a unique situation for me because I didn't get allowance. And that was my way of keeping a little money in my pocket. So I was excited about football.
So how long did you stay in the Little League?
Until I was 12. I went to middle school, and at that age, middle school is like 12 through like 13, 14, right before you go to high school, 9th grade, 10th grade. And they always begged me to play, and I didn't want to play because they were terrible. My middle school was terrible. Didn't win the game, never won the game. And so I opted out to play. I just said I continued to play Little League. It was more competitive to me, and I was kind of afraid to play against older guys. I'm at 12 playing against guys, 14, 15, they were bigger. So I was like, no. And then once I got ready to go to high school, it was the same thing that happened to me with Little League. Coaches contacted my mom, hey, bring them over here, bring them over here. And one thing that scared my mom off from these type of coaches were that they were telling her, he don't have to worry about grades. My mom was like, no, I want him to go get an education. Like, she pushed me. She didn't care if I never played football. Like, education was her thing. So any team or coach that approached my mom was like, we're going to make sure we push them straight to college. Like, we got the teachers. Everybody's going to be on board. Like, my mom was like, no.
Yeah, that's crazy.
No. And from there, I played high school ball and went through some little stuff in high school.
What high school did you go to?
Cordova High School. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Cordova High School. But that was a school off in the suburbs, so I was driving 45 minutes to go to school every day. Like, that was so far for me to do. And, you know, I was this inner-city kid going out to the suburbs. It was my first time really being around a lot of white people and hearing, you know, one of my best friends come from Cordova High School. He's so the opposite of me. He's a country boy, go hunting and things like that. But we were like this, like two peas in a pod, like, and going there taught me a lot of stuff that I'll never forget, but it also showed me that I had a lot of people in my corner, because I went through a situation in high school. One in the biggest moments of my life, I was recruited. I was number 13 running back in the nation as a junior. And I was at this time, I was committed to go to Clemson University to play running back. This was before C.J. Spiller was even, you know, recruited. And I had all of the SEC schools, ACC schools. And one thing, like I told Bjorn, like Florida State was my dream school. Florida State was my dream school because I was a big Deion Sanders fan.
Yeah.
And I wanted to go to Florida State so bad, but they never recruited. They don't have to recruit out of Florida.
Yeah.
So I was going to go to Clemson, and then I got in trouble and had to go to juvenile. Now, a lot of people Google and try to figure out stuff about my life, and I had went through a very serious situation where I was accused of aggravated rape. And me, amongst three other guys, along with a half-brother who I never knew for all of my life, really, situation happened. And next thing I know, the first day of school, I was being arrested, not knowing what's going on. And once I found out, it was like, yeah, this girl is accusing you, your brother, and a couple other guys of aggravated rape. And this is when, like, everything changed. Like, I just felt like, damn, what is, like, I didn't think, I knew myself, like, I was innocent, so I believe, like, I was like, the justice system, I believe in the justice system. But at 17 in Memphis, they try to try you as an adult. So when you hear that you're facing 16 years, like, you think, like, your world is over. Me, myself, like, no, there's no effing way. No effing way. I told my mom, like, Mom, we cool. I know I didn't, you know, do anything wrong. Like, let's just, you know, fight it out, whatever. And so everything, we went to court a few times. The girl never showed up or whatever. So they end up dismissing the case and whatnot. And so I thought everything was over with. I thought everything was, like, cool. I get to go back to football. I had missed the first game or whatever. And it got way bigger than I could have ever imagined. I was, you know, crucified as, like, this is around the time, like, Kobe Bryant had went through his situation, and they was trying to make an example out of me for something that didn't even happen during school. I was suspended from school sports, and so scholarships started going away. Clemson still wanted to sign me, but people were call the college and tell them, are you going to recruit a rapist and this and that? And they started diminishing my name. I was on the news every day in my city. I was afraid to leave the house. I was, like, suicidal thoughts. Like, I lost everything in a blink of an eye that I know for sure, like, God, come on. I know, you know, like, come on. Help. We got to turn the situation around. No, I'm innocent, but the news can take it and spin everything. So when that happened, man, I was suspended from high school sports, and me and my mother, we kept appealing the verdict that the school council gave me. And eventually they uplifted the appeal, and I was able to play the last three games. My team lost every game, and I got to play the last three games, and it came down to, like, the situation was so big that I had people protesting outside of the school, the news trying to get exclusive interviews. I had to get escorted into the games by the, like, police to make sure nobody was going to do anything to me and stuff. So it was, man, I'm sorry I'm getting emotional about it, but it was one of the craziest times of my life where I thought, like, my life was, like, truly over that situation. And it was something that's very hard to let go and get over, because, like I said, like, the NFL is really, like, my dream, and it was, like, right there. I'm going to Clemson University, like, one of the biggest schools, who eventually end up being national championships, you know, a couple of times, and it, one of the worst feelings in life, Sammy, like, one of the worst feelings in life to kind of lose everything. But I just got to thank God I got that second chance. Now, like I said, I was recruited to play running back, but when I would go to camps my junior year, my high school coach would tell universities, like, look, Jock is a hell of a running back, but son of a bitch can play safety too. Like, put him at safety and just watch him. So teams would, like, let me go to camps, and I would participate on both sides. So ideally, I was had a scholarship to play either side of the ball. And I signed with Texas Tech to play strong safety. And so due to everything that transpired with that case, I missed a lot of school. I had teachers that hated me because I was going black guy going to this white suburban school. The girl was white. So it was just a bad, ugly situation. And so I ended up having to go to junior college because of not being able to make up my grades. And, you know, a lot, some of it was my fault. I was a class clown in school. Like, I was smart and very intelligent kid, but, you know, you're liked for football. Like, you know, my teachers like me, or, you know, they're not going to fail me or flunk me or anything, but some of them hit it out for me, like, after that. Like, no, he's not. We'll make sure he won't go to school. We'll make sure his life is over. But I got that opportunity. I had a real good conversation with Mike Leach, who was the head coach at that time. He studied law. So his thing was like, man, I understand the situation. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. But I had to go to junior college. And once I went to junior college, man, I practiced the summer ball at safety and played the first game at safety. And like a roll down linebacker. And after that first game, the coach was like, damn, we might have to move you back to running back. Like, defense, we pretty good, but we don't have a running back. And we know you can play running back. So finished my freshman year as a running back, was All-American. Came back the second year, started at safety again, played the first game at safety again. Same situation. Second game, moved back to running back. And then
even though you were a JUCO All-American, they put you back on safety.
Yeah. Because that was my commitment to Texas Tech, like to play strong safety. So that was like, okay, we need you. We need to win games. So they kept me at running back, and I had a lot of success. Shout out to Coach Parchman. That man's an amazing man. He was one of the guys. You ever seen the movie Friday Night Lights?
Yes.
He was he wasn't an actor, but he was one of the coaches during that era. Or was a part of that whole thing. So I had him as a head coach, and he was Cedric Benson's high school coach. So he believed in big running backs and wanted me to go to Texas, but he knew that I had to go to Texas Tech. But I didn't know a lot about recruiting, so I kind of kept myself off the board. But once I became JUCO National Player, Offensive Player of the Year, I was like, I'm not going to go to Texas Tech to play safety. They're a passing team. They're a passing team. So I started opening myself up to other schools. TCU wanted me very bad. I had a scholarship to go to Oregon, Arizona, most of the SEC schools again. But something about University of Kansas sparked my interest. They were in the Big 12. I love basketball. I know how many people I love to play basketball. Like, that's my favorite thing to do outside of football. But I went to Kansas, and I was like, man, this is the only time I see or hear about Kansas for basketball. But this year they play, and for the next 2 years, they play everyone in the Big 12 South, which is Texas, Oklahoma, you know, and those schools, in 13 TV games. And I was like, at this time, I was riding my high horse. I was like, 1 year, and I'm going to NFL. That was 1 year. That's all I need. I'm 2 years out of JUCO, 1 year in college. I'm going, you know, to the NFL. I get there, the biggest recruit that Kansas ever signed. They never signed a 4- or 5-star recruit, and I was getting so much media attention. I arrived at Kansas, and none of my teammates liked me. None of them. Not one spoke to me like, I had a nice car. So, you know, they was thinking the school got him a nice truck, you know, and, you know, like, they totally judged me without getting to know me. They totally judged me. I wanted to leave. I didn't feel comfortable. I asked the coaches, could I leave? And they, you know, flew in from their vacation. No, we need you to stay. What do you need to feel comfortable? I was like, man, none of my teammates talked to me. We got this thick-ass playbook, and we are no huddle team. Like, how am I going to learn this playbook? Like, I'm not the person that's going to be For me to learn a playbook, I like to get repetitions at it. Mm-hmm. So I, you know, like looking at a book is like studying for a test. That's kind of hard for me. You know, I don't stay too focused, but at practice, I'll learn a playbook like this. You put me in whatever position, I'll learn it. But a playbook the size of a Western civilization book, like, was crazy. I was like, what the hell is that? I went from a small playbook at junior college to this Bible, you know? So I was like, I wasn't learning a playbook. They told me that they was going to play I formation. I get there. It was straight gun. So, you know, I was having coordination problems with the quarterback fumbling the ball because when the ball is snapped, I would go instead of waiting for the quarterback to get it. So we had a few fumbles, and I'll never forget it. This is when I thought it was over, like, for sure. You know, that you have that time where all the scouts can come watch practices. Every scout was out there because at this time, Kansas had just won the Orange Bowl. So they come in. We were ranked, I think, 13 in that area. We're going to have 13 TV games. We had some big-time playmakers that came back. And right there in the middle of practice, the coach stopped practice. He grabbed me and jacked my ass up and told me I was the biggest flop he ever seen. Since somebody, he said, I don't know who this person was, but he literally called me a flop in front of all these scouts.
Why?
He's an asshole. Like, if anybody who watched, like, Big 12 football, they know, you know, and this is nothing personal against Mark Mangino, but he headed out. Like, he's one of those, like, you come in, I'm going to make you, I'm going to build you how I want you to be type of person. If you don't, you know, ride with my personality, you know, what I want for you, you couldn't have a personality. You couldn't, you know, like, be you. And it was hard. It was hard. Like, anytime I was in a newspaper, and this is when I had to learn how to conduct myself with interviews. If I said something that he didn't agree with in the interview, he would call me in the office and get on my ass about it, or throw me in a doghouse. I was the only guy who took reps as the ones but didn't play. Like, I took reps with the ones, but another guy would get more carries, and then the third string running back would get more carries. So this is when I knew, like, he had it out for me. He had it out for me, and I thought that I wasn't going to succeed. And so throughout the season, I tried to leave. We played Iowa State, and he took me out because of a call got reversed on a fumble or something like that. I got stripped under a pile. They reviewed it, and he came over to me, took his mic down, was like, hey, if you come back, your ass is done. Your ass is done. If they get the ball, your ass is done. Inconclusive evidence, set me on the bench, and was like, yeah, you stay there. I cried on the fucking sideline, cried on the way back. I'm sitting maybe like three rows away from the offensive coordinator, tears rolling down my eyes. I'm like, I'm done. I don't even want to be here no more. Like, I'm done. He keeps snatching every opportunity from me. I don't get no reps, but I got to go against 6'4 linebackers every day. I got to put my bite on the line. I know, you know, I'm a competitor. I don't want anything given to me, nothing. I go compete for it. You know, but I know that, and just like the rest of my teammates knew, they knew the guy that they were starting wasn't better than me, but it was a political thing. I knew it. That's the first time I learned about politics in football, for sure. And so I was like, okay, I just want to be happy. I want to transfer. I want to get the hell up out of here. I love Kansas. I love Lawrence. But me and this coach, like, bumping heads. Now, I respect my coach, but when you go to insulting me, like, he would call people names at practice, talk about where you from. Like, this is a whole different thing outside of football. You talk about a player because he's from, oh, the ghetto or this and that. Like, that's wrong. I feel like that's wrong. Yeah. You can talk, be hard on me as a coach, but don't talk about where I'm from. Like, what gives you that right to do that?
So, obviously, on a very, very, very different level, I can totally relate to that because I arrived at North Dakota and the first time the head coach, Greg Ball, saw me, and he was with a scout from the New York Jets.
Mm-hmm.
He came in the locker room, and he looked at me and didn't say anything, like, welcoming. He said, if you're not getting stronger and faster in the next 4 weeks, we're going to send your ass back to Germany.
Wow.
So, okay. I was like, all right, thank you, sir. Yep. You know? And then the first time the defensive coordinator saw me, he asked me if I'm from East or West Germany.
Why does that matter?
Yeah. And I was like, West. And he was like, yeah, I just want to check on you if, you know, if we're the enemy or the friend, you know, because of the whole after the war.
Really?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Like Soviet Union.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. And the interesting thing is that the head coach, he left for Wyoming and he became Mark and Zotcha's head coach. Mark, my friend Mark from Football Bromance, that played plays for the 49ers.
Yeah.
He became his head coach. And I tried, and he told me, like, that's the biggest asshole ever. Like, man. And that's how I can relate. You know, those people, it's they don't criticize you with football. They criticize you for who you are or where you come from.
Background. This coach threatened me all the time. He was like, you're lucky we're giving you a second chance. We normally don't take junior college guys. Like, bro, what?
Why are you?
Like, no, it was every day he was threatening coaches. He was like, our running back coach, we was doing the drills. He comes over and tells the coach, hey, if so-and-so don't put his mouthpiece in, I'm gonna fire your ass. It was stuff like that. And it just was beyond me. I never met a person like that before. Like, he ended up getting fired because of players complaining to the athletic director. He was putting his hands on guys and just doing things beyond what he's supposed to do as a coach outside of being a football coach. Like, I like coaches that are players' coaches, make that connection, but he wasn't at all. Like, you know, he did what he did as far as making Kansas successful as a football team. Like, I respect him for that, but how you treat your players, man, that's different. You know, it was something that I didn't agree with. As a human being, like, I always give respect and demand it back, but I hate disrespect and I hate being insulted or someone questioning my intelligence, you know, and he would do these type of things. So when I transferred and he wouldn't release me, I was like, I'm leaving. He would not release me to any college that was big. Texas Tech, no. Ole Miss, no. Any school that was already wanting me before, he would not sign a release. So I went off the radar and went to Tennessee Tech, signed on as a walk-on. So I went from this highly recruited guy to paying for college my senior year. And then I had to sit out because of transfer rules at that time. I was a double transfer. So I had to sit out, and that's when my career really took a turn for the worse.
Tennessee Tech, what year was that?
2009, 2010.
That's Cookeville, Tennessee?
Yes, exactly. What do you know about Cookeville?
I know a lot about Cookeville. I'll tell you what about Cookeville. So when I went back to Berlin, and I was like 112 kilos, like
112 kilos. Yeah. I saw a few pictures of you.
Yeah, in North Dakota, I was like, you know, buff.
Yeah.
And I came here and I played in the German Football League for a few years and for the Berlin Rebels. And then I was just, you know, done with it after all these years.
Yeah.
And I wanted to lose weight. And I was like, yeah, but I need something competitive. So I found this sport called CrossFit.
Man, don't get me started on CrossFit.
And I lost 35 kilos in under a year. I changed my diet and everything. Wow. And they had this big CrossFit competition here.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy named Rich Froning from Cookeville, Tennessee.
Hey, I got a funny story about him. I almost fought him in school.
Really?
And then he becomes this CrossFit like idol. I'm like, what?
Dude, Rich Froning and I are friends. I have his phone number. I'll send him a selfie.
I guarantee you, if you tell him about the situation, it was an intramural football league because I told you I couldn't play. So I was hanging around some frat buddies, and they was like, man, you can play with us with our intramural for flag football. I was like, cool, I'll play.
He played a lot of flag football. He still does, yeah. But
that's how we met, and I was like, man, this guy's an asshole. He talk, because he was playing on the team, and my team was getting ready to advance to the championship. And then he found out that I actually played football. He was like, no, he can't play anymore. So I couldn't play in the rest of the tournament.
Oh,
and I was
no.
like, no, I'm going to kick this guy's ass. And I hated him ever since. And then it's like, you know, like I started doing CrossFit, right? I love CrossFit. Like at this point in time, he had just started because he started working with our strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah, and he worked at Tennessee Tech.
Exactly. So they was implementing this CrossFit stuff. So I'm like, we go in and we're doing 100 snatches. And I'm like, what is this bullshit, man? Well, I don't want to do this. This is a lot of reps. You know, it's fast paced. And I'm like, nah, I'm cool. I never liked it then. But in the back end, until end of my career, like I started to like it. I started to look like how I made my body look. I was in the best shape of my life. Yeah. So I started to appreciate it. But living in Brazil, you know, I got sponsored by a CrossFit gym. And I'm in there working out. And well, who do I see on the wall? A big ass
Rich Froning sign.
I'm pissed off every day looking at this guy, man.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, so for all you guys out there, so this guy that I know and this guy that Jack, well, knows, wants to wanted to fight, is back actually
then. It's over now.
The GOAT of the sport.
GOAT.
The Michael Jordan of CrossFit.
Exactly. And I was like, what are the odds? Anytime someone had to bring him up, I was like, I was this close from kicking his ass. But, you know... That was just me and my competitiveness. I was like, bro, dang, why I can't play? You just took the only thing that I was having fun with, you know? Like, you just took it away from me because I play football. And so, I don't have no serious, like, problem with him. But at that point in time, like, I was like, this guy. But I
visited him twice in Cookeville. I've been twice to Cookeville, Tennessee.
I heard a lot of good things about Rich, man. And, you know, it was nothing personal. And it's just a funny story to me that, that's the person that, you know, back then that I was like.
Do you know that Michael Birdsong went to Tennessee Tech?
Yeah.
We had the exact same conversation.
Yeah, we spoke when I learned about when he signed last year and then we played against him. I was like, yeah, we brothers. You know, we brothers. We both went Tennessee going to Eagles. He was like, what? I'm like, yeah, man. And so he got there after I left. Yeah. But, man, shout out to Michael Birdsong too, man. Awesome quarterback.
I was so bummed when I heard that he stopped playing.
Yeah. That, I mean, that's unfortunate, you know, but, you know, guys make decisions that they, you know, have to put the cliques up, man. I'm just not ready to make that decision.
No, you're not. So talking about decisions, so what happened then? I mean, you were in this dire situation. You couldn't transfer. Did you just ride it out or what? What was the next step?
Yeah, so I hit up Tennessee Tech, and, you know, they was like, man, we don't have any scholarships right now, but, you know, hopefully second semester, you know, we might can get you on. So I was like, fine. I don't have any other options right now. Like, it's close to home. I was back close to my family that I needed at that point in time. So, like, okay, took out a loan, Pell Grant, the whole, you know, shebang, like a regular student, and walked on. And eventually the second semester they got me on a scholarship, but – the nice car that I had to give it up, you know, like all that. I had to really do what I needed to do to survive. And this is how Jock Crawford got fat. I got fat because not being able to work, going to school, I still, you know, practice with the team and stuff, but I couldn't play and stuff. So it got to a point in time where the coach was like, yeah, you don't even have to practice, just, you know, because I hate to waste your reps and stuff like this. But I started playing poker, free poker tournaments, and I was winning, and that's how I paid for, like, stuff like rent, food, and, you know, being able to sustain life. So at these poker tournaments, you know, they last for hours. Start getting pitchers of beers and drinking beer and start getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Then my senior year, I was, okay, at Kansas I was 225. At Tennessee Tech I was 248. I went from being top-tier tailback to fullback, third-string fullback, like that. So my coach was like, hey, you gained 5 more pounds, I'm putting you at nose tackle. Straight up. He was like, putting you at nose tackle. And then I started trying to lose, you know, a little weight. And the type of formations that they ran like wing T, you know, a lot of traps and stuff. So I never got back at tailback until the end of the season. They started running more out formation, and I ended up being MVP of the team, you know, but I was nowhere near who I was like at Kansas. I was not in that type of shape. I didn't have speed. I would break runs, get my ass hawked down. Like, I never experienced that. Like, if I show you or see film of how big I was, you'd be like, that can't be you. That can't be you. But, you know, I had some decent film, a lot of good runs, but even the NFL scouts that came to see me, it was like, man, what happened to you? What happened to why? And you look way bigger than you were at Kansas. How much you weighing? I'm not trying to tell them I weigh 248. I'm like, yeah, 235, 240, you know. But it started to turn to my eyes like, guy fell off. Then, you know, finished the season. I didn't finish school. I left to go to Florida to train and try to lose some weight. And at this time, Tennessee Tech didn't have scouts on, you know, come to see players like that. I think maybe we had one scout come. And I didn't even get to do my pro day at Tennessee Tech. They sent me to University of Memphis because it was going to be more scouts there. And I'm from Memphis. So I had that privilege to go do my combine there. Ran a slow 40 time. Like, I just poor numbers, unfortunately. Like, the film and, you know, things I've done before. Like, coaches know. They see potential in the player. Like, okay, if he's in shape and stuff, we know what type of player. He's an athlete. But, you know, political-wise, they want to see 4.4 or 4.5s, you know, good numbers. And then the NFL lockout happened, so I didn't get a chance to get invited to any camps. Like, the Baltimore Ravens and a couple of teams, like, man, you know, we would love to have brought you in the camp, but unfortunately, this NFL lockout thing is for real. So I had a new agent who didn't have any, you know, contacts. So, I mean, the odds were really stacked against me, and the predicament that I put myself in as far as, like, being in shape and stuff didn't help. So I didn't end up getting drafted. Like, I think my agent had got a call around the fourth round, but they end up going with a running back from Louisville or whatever. So I was like, okay, maybe I'll go, you know, late or something. At least somebody's going to give me a shot. Never happened. And then I set out for 2 years. And this is how my journey in Europe started right after this. I was in Miami. Living the life.
What do you mean living the life?
Man.
What did you do? Playing poker?
No, more than poker. Seriously, in high school, and the reason why I wanted to go to University of Clemson is because I had a friend who was like the best tight end / DN in the country, and he signed with Clemson. I knew nothing about recruiting or schools. I knew that he wanted to go to NFL. He know where to go. His uncle was a Division I coach, so he knew, you know.
How it works.
Yeah. So I was like, I'm following him. He would always tell me, right, I know you're going to go to the NFL. We kind of knew. We had what other players didn't have, you know. And he said he's going to Clemson. I'd never heard of Clemson. So I'm going where he going. Then my situation happened in high school. I had to take a different route. But – you know, I was training in Tampa, Florida, and then I told my mom and my family, I'm like, man, I'm not staying in Memphis for the rest of my life. I went to Florida once. I said, I'm moving to Florida. So after the training was done for the NFL Combine, I had all my stuff in my car, moved to Florida. I said, I don't care what I'm going to do. I'm going to get a job. I'm staying here. I'm not moving back home. And so I was looking for jobs to be a bouncer, whatever I can do that, you know, it's kind of – get quick cash. So I moved to Miami and became a bouncer on South Beach for 2 years. Not for 2 years. I did it for like half a year. It was fun.
Ocean Drive?
Collins Ave. Cameo. Club Cameo. I worked there as a bouncer. And, you know, my friend that I'm telling you about, he was playing for the Miami Dolphins. Now, during college, we didn't talk as much, but we were like brothers, like, for sure. Like, it was no love lost, but I'm just not the person that if I meet someone famous or something like that, or if I know someone famous, that I'm, like, always on them. Like, you know, I'm not acting like a fan or anything. Like, and so I just was – I had a girlfriend at that time, and I told her she's a big Dolphins fan. And we were watching the game. I was like, yeah, that's my bro. He made a play. I was like, yeah, that's my brother. She was like, you don't know him. I'm like, yeah, I do. So I sent him a text message during the game. He hit me up after the game. He was like, where you at? What you doing? I was like, yeah, bro, I live in Miami now. He was like, no shit. He sent me an address and was like, man, come hang out. And then I went from being a bouncer to living like I played in the NFL. Because we were like brothers. He did not want me not to be around. Like, I was like someone who made him feel like he was at home. Like, he made friends with other NFL guys, but he was also like an introvert too. So I was someone that he was comfortable with all the time. So he, hey man, move in with me. I want you to be, you know, around. Like, I know you're going to make sure I ain't, you know, falling off or doing no stuff like that. But you can't, it's hard to play NFL football in Miami. It's too much distraction, too many. And so, you know, we was out and about every day. And like, that whole scene is just different.
You were supposed to protect him from that.
I was, but I'm not the one with all the money. It's his decisions. I'm like, hey, man, I don't think that's a good
idea. You were supposed to take care of him.
I was trying to, Sammy. I was trying to. But, you know, what you going to tell a multimillionaire? I'm not his financial advisor or anything. But
I can tell Bjorn shit.
Okay, so you get it. You know, they're going to make the decision that they want to make. But I was always, like, making sure he wasn't going to get into trouble. You know what I'm saying? Like, you want to live your life how you want to live it, live it. But all the stuff that can get you put in jail and stuff, like, I'm going to make sure that you're not, you know, going down the avenue. But I want to have some fun, too. I went from being a bouncer to the VIP line to being in the VIP. So my life did a 180. And, you know, we would go out. People didn't know if I played in NFL or not because I still, you know, had this figure. But it was one of the best experiences ever. I mean, you know, I learned a lot. Like, if I went to the NFL, what not to do with my money. I learned a lot from that situation.
Why didn't you become a financial advisor to professional players? You even thought about it, right?
I did, because at this point in time, once I figured out how much money he was spending, I was like, dude, he would give me his bank card. Like, hold on to that, man. Like, he knew that he was spending money excessively. You know, he did what he did to take care of his family and stuff like that. But Miami's a fast life, and once you down there, you got to have this look. You know, you go to certain clubs and stuff, people popping bottles. You want to pop bottles too? That's a lot of money. It was $5,000 for a table, and then another couple of thousand for the bottles. Like, these guys spending a lot of money, and so the best thing that ever happened to him was him going to Green Bay. Like, he got traded to Green Bay, and it was like the total opposite. Like, there's nothing to do in Green Bay, so it was good for him. It was crazy. But when he got traded to go to Green Bay, a guy that I met training for the NFL Combine, he ended up playing in Finland. And so I saw him playing in Finland, and I was like, man, how is it, you know? And he was, like, telling me, you know, what it was. And I was like, man, how can I get on? And he was like, I'll help you. You know, and we created a Euro Players account. And so I was networking a lot in Miami as well.
For people that don't know, Euro Players is, I don't know, is it still a thing? It used to be a website where American players can sign, you know, upload tape, and German or European coaches can contact them.
Exactly. It's just like the Facebook of football players.
Yeah.
You know,
Euro Players, yeah.
Yeah, so shout out to Euro Player too, because that helped launch my European career internationally. So, but, you know, back to the story, he was over there playing and told me about the level of competition. And while I was networking there, I had found a couple of agents that were like, you know, I showed them my old film and my resume and stuff. They was like, man, if you lose some weight, I'll try to get you a shot, but you need film. You need film. So I went to a couple of CFL workouts, made it in like their top three guys. But again, I needed film. And I was like, F it. I'm going to go play in Europe. So I started in Finland. And then this is another unique thing about my life. My dad played in Europe, but I never knew where. Because remember, I didn't have a relationship with him. but he played in Europe. And so that was part of the reason why I used to watch the NFL Europe as well, to see if I ever saw him. But when I went to play in Finland, the team that contacted me recognized my last name because of my dad. And they was like, is Xavier Crawford your dad? I was like, yeah. And they was like, okay, yeah, we're going to sign you. Like, it was your dad was a great line of me running back here. Like, great. Then my second year, I played for the same team that he played for. I started meeting his old teammates. People telling me stuff, man, your dad, this. And I'm hearing stories about my dad, like, I don't know. And these people thought that me and my dad had, like, a tight relationship. But I'm like, man, y'all telling me stuff about my dad I don't even know. And that was crazy for me. Crazy. They started sending me articles when he was in the newspaper. And I'm looking at me and my dad are, like, identical twins. And for them, it blew their minds. Like, sometimes I'm often mistaken for my dad if I'm in Memphis. Like, X-Man. No, I'm his son. Dang, you look just like that, man. I thought you were X-Man. But that was crazy for me.
How was the feeling of not knowing your dad, but knowing that he played in the same uniform?
Mind blowing. Like, of all the places in the world.
Finland. What city?
Turku.
Dude, my wife's from Finland.
What?
Yep.
That's crazy.
So my son is half Finnish.
Wow.
My son speaks fluent Finnish.
Suomi?
Yeah.
I know Ola Huva, Mitaku.
Yeah, Mitaku. I know.
Huva. Yeah, Huva. Ola Huva. That's crazy.
How was that culture shock for you? Because Finland is a culture shock for a German.
Yeah.
How was it for an American? Was it the first time you've been to Europe?
Yeah. That was all my right. First time leaving. Well, I went to Mexico, but... That doesn't count. Over the water, like, that was my first time. I didn't know what to expect. I was afraid of the long plane ride. And then getting to, my first city was Seinäjoki, so it's like a country town. Very small. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know how practice was going to be or if guys spoke English. And, you know, didn't know what to expect. But those guys treated me well there, very well. Very grateful for Finland, man. Very grateful. And then my first year, like I told you, I set out 2 years. My first year playing, I ended up being the MVP of the league. And I sent film to some NFL scouts. And the only team that hit me back was like the North Carolina Panthers. And that's when I was like, dang, I'm close. I'm almost back in it. I'm about to get my shot. Because they said, we like your film, but – the league ends in September. They're already past camp, you know. So it's like I missed that window just, you know, that much. But it was – that gave me the drive to never give up. That turned my whole situation around because I was like, F it. I'm going to keep playing until I get my shot. Until I get my shot, I'm going to keep sending film. I'm going to keep blasting. I'm going to annoy these scouts by sending my film to them, that email, to somebody give me a shot. Never got a call back. Another team in Finland, Turku, hit me up and basically was like, yeah, we're going to offer you more money than whatever they paid you in Seinäjoki. We want you to come here. We want you to come here. So I told them, gave my team an option to match or beat it out. They didn't. And so I went to Turku. We went to the championship. I got kicked out of the game. First time ever.
Why?
So a lot of guys on defense like to try to get me out of my game, try to antagonize me some type of way. And I've never gotten personal fouls or anything like that. And so the quarterback threw an interception. The returner comes back. I didn't get a chance to tackle him. And so I'm walking back to the sideline. But the defensive guys are like celebrating in my face, like super hype, like face mask to face mask. So I mushed a guy that might have looked like a punch, you know, depending on the angle. And flag comes out. I got kicked out of the game. And we end up losing. And that probably one of the worst decisions I ever made as a football player, like on the field, is to do something to jeopardize, you know, my team actually being able to win a game, especially a championship. But I don't feel like I punched a guy because I know, like, I wouldn't want to hurt my hand. Like, I've been in altercations on practice. Like, I've seen guys, you know, get into it at practice. But why would you want to punch another man in the helmet? That's stupid. But, like, it was, like, really open hand. Like, get out of my way. And I still have that film. I still have that film. And
refs see what refs see, you know.
I'm not going to speak on the refs there. I'm not going to speak on the – but, you know, everybody know the Helsinki Roosters, man. Like, they are the team of Finland. And so, you know, I knew that the odds were stacked against us anyway because we were playing in Helsinki. You know, the president of the league's a Rooster guy, Helsinki Rooster guy. So I was just kind of biased about the whole situation. Like, they were looking for any reason to get me out of the game. For sure. For sure. So, I mean, I apologize to my teammates. It hurt. It hurt. And, you know, the team wanted to bring me back. But I ended up going to Brazil. I went to Brazil. It was an opportunity to go somewhere else.
Beautiful weather.
Yeah. Beautiful. Very beautiful. Beautiful and make me want to relocate for life type of beautiful. So it was like... Brazil was a reality check for, like, me understanding, like, football is not known everywhere in the world. That's the first time I ever felt like...
That's soccer country. Like, Germany is soccer country, but that's soccer country. Like, huge.
No, they're, man, that's crazy. I had never watched a soccer game in my life. But the first 2 days in Brazil, I meet Neymar.
Mm.
Hung out with Neymar. I was like, what? That's crazy. For me, that was crazy because I didn't know who Neymar was at this point in time. I made a post like, I'm going to go to Brazil. I'm going to learn how to play soccer. One of my Finnish friends was like, yeah, look up a guy named Neymar, and I meet him 2 days later.
That's amazing.
That was crazy.
So how was that experience?
Shocking, to say the least. Like, not knowing that the level of football – like, you can see pictures of teams, and you can pretty much see if a team is really well organized or they can manipulate anything with content. But you can tell if guys don't have good-looking helmets or uniforms and stuff. You can tell, like, okay.
That's interesting to hear that from an American player's perspective. That's stuff you look at when teams try to recruit you.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So I look, and I got there, and then I realized, like, we practice once a week. Once a week. Once a week, I had so much time on my hands. So I started training on the beach every day, and then I started telling guys, like, any guys that wanted to get better, come train with me because we don't have practice. We don't have other time for us to get better. So I started training guys, and I started seeing guys get better. I'm being hands-on with them, taking a guy who only knew soccer and making him a DB and a receiver, and him going and showing it in the games and getting highlights. That's when I found my love for my passion for, like, helping guys develop. I didn't want to be a coach, cute X's and O's, but to be hands-on and watch a player develop, mentor them, you know what I'm saying? And also teach guys what not to do, learning from my mistakes and my career path. Like, I found pleasure in that, and that's why I ended up loving Brazil because I saw how much I can offer to them, not only as an athlete, but giving back and helping guys because they all want to go play ball somewhere else now. You know, we signed two Brazilians last year. I knew of Octavio. I knew he was a beast, but us playing for the Thunder, like, made us closer and made us brothers. Like, now we really cool. Really cool. And I appreciate Brazil. I have a son in Brazil. So that's when I knew I for sure had purpose in Brazil as well. But my goal and dream was always to play in Germany, and then this situation happened. And thankful to Coach Marcus Herford, who played with me at Kansas, you know, I helped him get into Europe playing and coaching, and then the opportunity came back to me. Like, it was good karma, you know, so I appreciate Herford for giving me the opportunity as well.
So you were recruited from Brazil to the Berlin Thunder.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard rumblings about the European League of Football, anything before that?
This is what happened. This is what happened. Exactly what happened. I actually thought that I probably wasn't going to play in Europe no more. And I started hearing about the ELF. And I was like, man, I don't have no contacts. They probably not going to take a guy my age because I'm older, you know. And so I was like, why even try? Why even try? I left it alone. I was like, I hope it works out. I hope it doesn't fold, because just oftentimes you see leagues in America, they start up like this type of league and then it folds. But I knew that Europe needed that. I seen the concept and I was like, I love it. I would love to play. But how do I get my ass in there? Boom, Hereford. Hey, man, I'm going to be coaching for the Thunder. We're going to need a running back. I was like, no shit. Yeah. It was a no-brainer. It was a no-brainer. A no-brainer. And I've been grateful to God ever since. Like, I started following Bjorn years before. And now, you know, the situation worked out. I was like, because I love that Bjorn had this program where he was trying to help athletes from here go to America. That was my idea with Brazil, and help them, you know, get opportunities. I feel like guys need these opportunities. And I was like, I wanted to connect with Bjorn.
Now you're playing for him.
It's crazy. And I started manifesting that. Like, I was like, I want to meet that guy.
And then you... Were you in Brazil when you called him in the clubhouse?
Yeah, I was in Brazil.
So we got to tell people.
Okay.
So there's this app called Clubhouse, and it was the thing during COVID times, right? Like lockout COVID times.
Right.
A lot of people, many people of you know Clubhouse, you know, like just audio only. And without going into what I went through a couple of years ago with losing my mom and my dad, having cancer for the second time, and I kind of lost the ability to speak to people.
Mm.
I was always like I am now,
gotcha.
But I lost it through, you know, the hardships. And then this app came, and I instantly had the idea of creating my own morning show.
Right,
and that kind of helped me, you know, get my juices flowing of nice. You know, entertainment and stuff like that. And that was all, you know, at the beginning of this whole, you know, me being more involved into football bromance and with mm-hmm. Bjorn. It wasn't the thing that it is now.
Right.
And I started this 7 a.m. morning show, and I did it every morning for, I think, 150 days. I don't know. Every morning, 7 a.m. I did this show. Consistently. Wow. Every day. 7 days of the week, 7 a.m.
Okay.
And people came into this show, dropped in randomly, because that's how the app works. And I always gave it a subject. Some political thing, yeah. Some health thing, a subject to discuss. Always 1 hour of discussion. Sometimes it went 3 hours. And at the time where the app was like en vogue, it was like 300 people in the clubhouse room. And obviously the app died now. It's not the thing anymore. Yeah. But one day... One day, there was a picture of a football player. And I, you know, you were in the audience.
Yeah.
And the host has to kind of like get you up on stage.
Right.
And I brought this football player on stage, and it was you.
Yeah. Most random thing ever. Because for me, it was like you said, during the pandemic time and lockdown, like that app was the go-to. It was the go-to, and even though the pandemic happened, you know, I knew I was signing to Berlin. So I was like, man, I like the network as well, but I also want to know stuff about the country, and, you know, I don't know only what I see. So I was like, man, okay, Germany, I'm going, like, let me jump in this.
I called the show Good Morning Germany with a flag on it, with a German flag, and that's what...
I said, let me go see what they talking about. And, you know, I click go in there, then bing, you pull me up. I was like, oh shit, I don't speak German. Like, I hope they speak English in here. And that's the first thing I said. And then I told you I was coming. You like, what?
And I told you I will contact you afterwards. Yeah, and we texted.
Exactly. And that was so random, man. And I just believe in like the universe.
That's
like,
seriously, that's insane. This story is insane.
Oh, for me,
and now
crazy.
You we I'm have really on the stage. Like, four things that really connect us, and we sit here, and you're, you know, the face of a team, you know,
man. For me, it's such a tremendous blessing, and I gotta say how grateful I am, even for you know, Hereford and, you know, Jag and the guys that brought me here last year. But even when Bjorn, you know, taking over and everything, you know, is brand new now, but being the only import that was brought back for me is, I can't thank them enough, because I say this all the time. I may not have made it to the NFL, and only God knows why, but this is my NFL, and I want to take advantage of it because it's my opportunity. I always wanted to play in Germany. I seen the NFL year before, and it's like being here now is so surreal. Like, it's crazy.
So how was your experience with the Berlin Thunder 2021?
It was, you know, with everything getting started up, it was a lot of chaos, but I understood because everything is so new. And so I didn't knock it, but the only thing that I knew that I could do was be there for my team the best way that I could and do what I could as an athlete for the team, you know. So, and that was me doing what was asked of me, you know, and that's being a player and trying to be a role model for these guys and also, you know, push the guys around me. But, you know, it was crazy, a lot of stuff that happened. But, you know, I'm impressed, very impressed about how things are going this year. Total 180. And I don't want to say it's too good to be true type of feeling, like, but I feel nothing but good energy around it. You know, like, I love the mindset of Coach Johnny, the rest of the coaching staff that I've already met. Like, I see him.
You always wanted a player's coach, and yeah, he really is.
Oh, he really is. We had our first interaction was a very long conversation, and I was able to feel him out, and I knew right away, like, I love Coach Johnny. I don't even know him a lot, but I love his mentality.
What was your first thought when you saw that Bjorn bought stakes in the franchise?
Crazy. I told you I wanted to meet the guy. Like, I would see him, you know, at the games and stuff, but, you know, he didn't interact. He wasn't, you know, hands-on or involved.
He couldn't.
But,
yeah,
I understood that, but I was like, oh, damn, that's the guy. You know, I said I wanted to meet. That's crazy. Now, you know, look at today, him being, you know, part owner and, you know, and being around more. Like, for me, is everything mind-blowing. Like, so I'm living a dream, living a vision that I saw. You know, and so I'm just grateful. I am completely grateful. I think I have a lot of great teammates. Like, I love these guys here. A lot of them, you know, they joke with me being older, but they like my little bros because I know that for them, what this league can do for them. The same that, you know, some of these guys are getting shots in the NFL now.
So with Bjorn being as involved as he is, he probably from day one, but send a precedent of, you know, his expectations of excellence,
mm-hmm,
or his expectations of discipline,
yeah,
and commitment. So that really changes the whole franchise when a first round pick comes in.
Exactly. He's been there. He know what it takes. He's been around that atmosphere before. So that's a no-brainer for him to be in position where he's at today. Like, why not? So, you know, I see it. I believe in the vision. And I see the pieces of the puzzle that he's putting together. I love it. Freaking love it.
You're currently in Berlin. How do you train right now? Because obviously you can't practice with the team.
Which sucks.
Which really sucks. Yeah. But it's the rules are the rules.
You got to respect them.
Do you go to a different gym, or what is your routine now personally? Since, by the end of April or May, at the beginning of May, you can start practicing with the team, right?
Yeah, I think the beginning of May. I'm not exactly sure the dates. I'm just waiting on them to say that we can practice together. But my routine right now. And
you live with your girlfriend?
Yeah, my girlfriend. And so, you know, I love you, baby. So you hear this. But
she's German and she lives here, and you're living with her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's important to say, because, I mean, you're not getting paid by the Berlin Thunder.
Exactly,
yet.
No.
So that's really extremely important to notice. Yeah.
There's nothing as far as like me volunteering, wanting to be at the volunteering practice. You know, that's me going to watch and give my moral support and let the guys know that I'm not just here kicking it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm here to make sure you guys stay motivated. I'm here to be on your ass as that player, the big bro player that's want the best out of y'all. So
Coach Little Albert, the talented kid.
Yeah, it's got that got nice. It got nice. I can't wait to see him on the field for sure. Like I think he got a lot of potential. I can't wait to get around him more, and you know, be able to help him reach his full potential. I know he's undersized, but there's a lot of great running backs that are undersized. And if he learns how to use that to his advantage, he's going to be amazing for us. For
sure. So you currently train like twice a day at the gym?
Yeah, so I mean, currently I do go to the gym. I wish that I could train with the guys, but yeah, I'm going to the gym or I'm training near my girlfriend's house, like doing running and, you know, field work and stuff, so I can stay on top of my game. And like I said, me and Alpha Jalo just did a ballers retreat, which is a safe space for European guys or whatever to come together and train. And we got some good competitive work. Everybody know Alpha's a great athlete. So, you know, and both of our backgrounds, being able to play offense and defense, that's what we wanted to do. Like, let's compete against each other, make each other better. It's my last opportunity to sharpen my skills before I have to report to camp. You know, and so that was the idea behind it, but also get around some other young athletes and let them be close to guys who are considered professional here, or, you know, how can we help mentor them get to where they want to be? So I've been on vacation. Me and my girl went to Cyprus for her birthday, and I'm just taking advantage of being in Europe because I always wanted to see the world as a kid, always. So I'm doing it. I'm living my dream, literally.
That's amazing, man. What a story. What a story. I'm lost of words, and that's actually a good way to end this, because you have probably the most amazing story I've ever heard out of an American player.
I appreciate that. I appreciate it.
Playing over here. And thank you for coming on and sharing this with us. And this has definitely not been the last time. I always say that this podcast will evolve through the season.
For sure.
I always say it's Hard Knocks for the ears.
Yeah, I'm with you. Know, I agree with you on that.
Go behind the scenes. And once the season begins, as it does in Hard Knocks, the show becomes different.
Yeah.
You know, like obviously they're going to go all the way with the NFL teams, but right until, you know, the first day of training camp until the last day of training camp, mm-hmm. Hard Knocks changes. It's a different TV show.
Yeah.
And that's what I envision for this podcast.
Man.
Because during the season, it will become a different, it will be different topics.
Yeah.
That's definitely not the last time you've been here.
I appreciate the opportunity, man. I love what you guys are doing. It only forces me to want to learn German more so I can, you know, really listen. But
So maybe by the end of the season, this will be a German podcast with you sitting here.
I don't know about that. I don't want to speak too much broken German, but you know, I'm fluent in Portuguese, so I'm gonna challenge myself to learn German for sure.
Dude, and this has been amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any last words you wanna say to the Thunder Nation out there?
Hey, you guys see what's going on, you know, social media, believe it. You can believe that. You can believe what's going on and being posted on social media. But I want to say thank you for all the Thunder fans. You know, you guys give us that support that we need to be that franchise that, you know, these guys have a vision for in the future. So all I can say is get ready to feel the Thunder and get excited.
Feel the Thunder.